the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. My name is Trevor Sikkema. With me is Benjamin Solak. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by RockAuto.com and also by BuiltBar.com. Ben, we have a very fun Fan Friday here for the good people today. I actually did not run this topic by you before I tweeted it out, so at first, apologies. I probably should have done that, but I saw that you liked and smashed retweet immediately, so I knew that you couldn't have, like, hated it too bad. Like, it couldn't have been
that or you tagged me in it, one of the two.
No, I tagged you in it, but, you know, sometimes I'll tag you in it, you won't see it for, like, 3 hours, which is okay. You know, we're busy, it's fine, you're just fired. But this one, you were just like, boom, on it. Like, retweet, boom.
Do you ever feel dirty when you're like, we have a great Fan Friday for you guys today? It's a topic I came up with by myself without consulting Ben. Does that ever feel, you ever hear that and just go, oh, no, well, maybe no, maybe not that?
No, actually.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Why would I? I feel like sometimes those are the best Fan Fridays.
Right. No. This is a good one. This is a tricky one because to share the topic, what the question that Trevor posited to the people this week was, give your case for the unsung heroes of the NFL. Give us the name of a player you believe deserves way more praise than the national audience gives them and tell us why. What's fun about this one is, like, it's inherently backwards because if we agree that they need more praise, then we are national media praising them. And sure, if we disagree that they don't deserve more praise, then we are thereby proving the point that you are trying to make. So it is a little bit of a backwards one, but it gives us an opportunity to talk about players that perhaps we don't usually talk about.
Yeah, and that's a good time. That's really the point of this exercise, is I know that, you know, ever since we started covering more of a national aspect of football, I don't know if this is true for you, I would assume that it is, but I've noticed, hey, I'll try to talk about different teams that I think that I know pretty well, and somebody be like, yo, you like left this guy off the list. And I don't do it in a prideful way. I'm always trying to be one of the first to say, like, hey, look, if you cover, or even if you just follow a singular team that you're a fan of, good chance you're going to know stuff about the team that I'm not going to, just as somebody who covers it more at a national level. So there's always these guys that I feel like are getting slept on around the league. And this was our opportunity to give you guys our platform in the best way, to get some bragging rights for some of these players that you really think deserve it. And I think we got some really good answers.
I agree in the sense that, like, as you go to national coverage, you learn about players you didn't realize and, like, how teams feel about them. At the same time, the longer in duration my career doing this is, the more players I've scouted. And so the better I know teams from that perspective, like, yeah, I remember last year when Cincinnati Bengals fans were like, you know who's really underrated and is doing a great job, like, you know, stepping forward for our team and whatever, is Andrew Billings, defensive tackle, nose tackle. And I get to go, well, in 2016, your boy had Andrew Billings ranked way too high because I knew all along that 4 years in his career, he'd finally be a good two down player. You know, so there is that aspect of it a little bit where, like, some of these deep cut guys are guys that you actually, like, had flags on hills for three draft classes ago. And that makes it really fun. You know, there are a couple names that are in here where I'm like, oh, frick, yeah, he's in here. You know what I mean? Because I'm excited because he was a player I liked.
There's one in particular that we're going to get to that I'm going to have this exact situation for. Actually, the praise probably isn't as warranted, but I'm going to go ahead and take my victory lap for it anyways. But we're not starting off there. We're starting off with Brian's response to the question. Brian wants to give T.Y. Hilton a shout out, and it's weird to start with T.Y. Hilton because I think that you could ask anyone around the NFL and they would tell you that T.Y. Hilton is good. I remember reading last November, somebody found the stat where the Colts were winless without T.Y. Hilton since like 2011 or 2012. Jeez. And then they had an above 500 record with him in. And obviously, I'm not over here preaching wide receiver wins, but I am talking about how important T.Y. Hilton has been to the Colts. And like I said, you look around the league or you ask anybody around the league, is T.Y. Hilton good? And they would tell you yes. But T.Y. Hilton's name never really gets brought up ever. Would you agree with that? That's the way that I feel.
Yes. It's funny because, like, I have the same problem with ranking wide receivers as I do with ranking quarterbacks, where there's just so much talent in so many different ways. Like, receivers are good in different ways, that it's very hard to say this is where T.Y. Hilton is in the rankings officially, right? And the other issue that you run into, you kind of have to, like, look at players of his body type, look at players of his mold, which Hilton's like 5'10", 185. Mm-hmm. Players smaller than Hilton aren't successful. Like, he is the floor for the size that you can be and stick in the league and be successful. Yet, he's still so good, like, physically, and like, he's tough, like, good through contact and after the catch, and he'll break tackles. Obviously, like, speed and quickness is the primary aspect of his game, but like, he's not deficient in that area. He's not like, you know, if KJ Hamler's good in the league, it's going to be because he's so quick and so fast, it covers up for other problems. That's not the case with Hilton, in my opinion. That sort is double-edged, where there's just a cap on how good Hilton can be, because for his speed and for his quickness, he's not going to be as good at Julio Jones at any point in his career. Because Julio Jones is just bigger.
Right.
And so that's the problem that you run into.
But that's kind of my point, right? I mean, like, you ask anybody and they would tell you that T.Y. Hilton is good. I mean, I'm looking at his stats right in front of me here, and the only season in which he had less than 1,000 yards while playing in at least 14 games in a year was none of them. Or no, 2017. 2017 was the only year in which he had less than 1,000 yards, and he had 966. So this guy, for what you say there, like, being a smaller wide receiver, he's been available, and he's been productive his entire career. And obviously he has meant a lot to when the Colts have been able to win. The offense has often run through T.Y. Hilton since 2012 is when he was drafted, but 2013 is really when he became a full-time starter for more than half the season. So I can agree with this one. As strange as it is to say, I can definitely agree with this one.
Yeah, I think that when I look, right, I think that continued success, even if there's never a time at which a player is like, you know, flat-out dominant, like Hilton, I don't think has ever been, like, you know, leader in receiving yards. I think he was close in 2016, but I don't think he actually ever got it. Or, like, you know, top scorer or whatever. But regular health and regular consistent quality play, those players are generally underrated. Cough, cough, the Ryan Kerrigan phenomenon, cough, cough.
Oh, we're getting we'll get to that.
Yeah. My favorite T.Y. Hilton stat that I could find for you was, since he entered the league in 2012, if you're talking about receivers who have garnered a significant number of targets, I put the number at 300, mm-hmm. Which over seven seasons really is not that much, but, you know, you pick whatever number you want. Players who have garnered at least 300 targets playing wide receiver, T.Y. Hilton is ninth on that list in yards per reception at 15.58. And the cool thing is that he's done that with 946 targets, which is more than anybody else in the top 10. Basically, Julio, who's at 15.0 at 12 in that ranking, is like the only guy who's nearing a 1,000 targets. He's over 1,000 targets. Everybody else is in like the 50s and in the 40s. It's like, yeah, Michael Floyd and Tyrell Williams and Deshaun Jackson. Josh Gordon's number one, obviously. Kenny Britt. But like, it's like a lot of guys who are really good explosive deep threats, but were never high volume guys. If we're talking really high volume players, T.Y. Hilton has more explosive plays in terms of yards per reception than pretty much anybody else in the league since he's joined. So this, what we're talking about, is explosive, consistent, high volume receiver. It's a short list of players, and Hilton's on it.
Big friend of the pod, Brad Kelly.
Never heard of him.
Wanted to give a shout out to Lawrence Guy. Lawrence Guy has been in the league since 2012. Started out with Indianapolis. Then I believe he went to Baltimore. Now he's with New England. He's been in New England since 2017. And Bill Belichick raves about this dude basically any chance that he can. You hear a lot of other guys like Kyle Van Noy, Jamie Collins. There are a lot of the guys that get the hype on that defensive line. But what Lawrence Guy does to, quote-unquote, do the dirty work, to allow a lot of other players to shine, to take up the space, to eat up the blocks, to really be a centerpiece and a versatile centerpiece at that, where he can move them. He can move Lawrence Guy basically to any technique along the defensive line. Like, if he really wants to get emphasis and take double team away from somebody else that they would rather get a one-on-one for, Lawrence Guy has been that player, it seems, for the Patriots over the last 2 years. And I'm with Brad here, because a lot of these other guys, have really cashed out, and their stats have been a lot better than Lawrence Guy's. I mean, all 3 years that he's been with the Patriots, he's had one sack, three sacks, respectively. Like, that's been his total. He's got five total in three seasons. So you look at that and you go, okay, so what? Those are pedestrian numbers. Who cares? But he's played in all 16 games for all three seasons for the Patriots, and he has been a key point in what they've been able to do for other players, which is probably the literal definition of unsung hero, what we're doing here on this podcast. And so I'm with Brad all the way here on the Lawrence Guy love.
Lawrence Guy, so firstly, like, guys, the best part of his career started in Baltimore in, like, 2016, 2017, right, before he started with the Patriots, which was
2015,
just like
2016.
So that's like your Dean Pease led Baltimore Ravens defensive line, which had like five bajillion players on it who would end up being good. Matt Judon was on it. That was the year they drafted Cam like Correa, I think. I think you had Michael Pierce at that time as well. Like, a bunch of guys who were just late round draft picks who were great, right? Or ended up being great because of what Baltimore was able to do to develop those guys. So he's Baltimore defensive lineman, so it's already good news. And then he signs with the Patriots, becomes a Patriots defensive lineman, which is like the only way you can be a Baltimore defensive lineman and then improve your odds of being successful is by becoming a Patriots defensive lineman. Guy is, I think that, like, you could say any three technique who doesn't rush the passer has a good chance to be underrated, because if they're a good player and they just don't have high sack totals, nobody's going to notice them. But with Guy, it's the fact that he plays like five tech to five tech. You know what I mean? Like, he plays everywhere for them. He's 6'4", 310. Like, he bases as a defensive tackle. He can play three tech or one for them, but he's huge. He's got great length and he has enough athleticism to play everywhere. So no, he doesn't get sacks, but it's like you said, like, he fundamentally does everything that he's asked at every position that you can play. And so it's like the ability of Guy to open things up for other players. And when they had Guy playing next to Danny Shelton, who also requires at least two human beings in terms of, responsibility, that's where you're able to put a Landon Roberts in at linebacker and just be like, fine, right? Like, Juwan Bentley at linebacker and just be fine. So these are good players. They're not great players, but they have, their lives are made pretty easy by the guys that are in front of them. Yeah. So I don't know if there's stats that are like, Lawrence Guy is good, but like, if you're going to, if you're going to ask me for, like, the film on a week-to-week basis, because I watch the Patriots defense pretty much every year at this point, the film is just, like, 93s all over the place.
Yeah.
And it's fundamentally sound.
You got to pay attention to him. You know, that's the key part of playing defensive lines. You want somebody where the offensive line or the scheme of how they have the protection on a play-to-play basis, you've got to pay attention to him. And if you don't, you're going to pay for it. And I think that Lawrence Guy is a key part in allowing the Patriots to do that in a variety of different ways. Josiah brought up a name that actually is brought up here a few times, which one would think maybe that's against the point, like Ben and I were referencing at the beginning of the podcast. But this guy definitely deserves a shout out, and that is Steelers cornerback Steven Nelson. Josiah said he was a top 10 cornerback last year, according to PFF. He didn't put up ridiculous numbers, but he only allowed a 51.5% completion rate. I looked it up. He played over 1,000 snaps. He said more snaps than almost any other corner in the league, which anytime you're playing 1,000 snaps, there's no doubt about that. This is his first year in Pittsburgh, and I also read further down on this list when somebody else was talking about Steven Nelson that he didn't give up a single touchdown in coverage this year. So, look, man, all those accolades for a guy who really his name is not in the national spotlight at all. And to be fair, it was his first year in Pittsburgh this year. And there were some other wild stories that were going on in Pittsburgh over the last couple of years that have probably taken the attention. This makes sense as a guy to shout out who's had a great 2019 that deserves some praise.
Yes, Steven Nelson's 2019 was good. No, I don't think he's underappreciated. I think his 2019 season was underappreciated, certainly. This is a good year, right? Nelson was not good for the Chiefs. Like, this is important to acknowledge. The Steelers had, if memory serves me correctly, I may be wrong on this, don't get mad at fam. The Steelers had, like, other plans at corner in free agency before landing on Nelson. because they weren't able to get those guys. Mm-hmm. So, like, Nelson, he started that last season in Kansas City. He was decent that last season in Kansas City. And then he signs the deal with Pittsburgh. It was a small deal. Listen, this is a Oregon State Beaver grade, so I do not want to besmirch him too much. Go Beavs. But he just, like, I want to be like, call me in 2020 when he has the same season. Because obviously he won't. If he still has a good season, then I think we have a conversation. Because
somebody please clip that and throw it back in Ben's face if he does.
Yeah. Now this is tricky. There's no doubt that not enough average NFL fans, national audience, which is the parameter for this question. There's no doubt that not enough of them know that Steven Nelson had a really good 2019. I bet you will, if you were like, hey, who is the Steelers starting corners? They would probably be like Joe Hayden and Artie Burns or some other dude. Like, they wouldn't know that it was even Nelson in the first place. So he's underappreciated in that way. He had one good season. Like, I can't get to underappreciated yet. You know what I mean? Like, was Shaq Barrett underappreciated last year? No. But I guess everybody went nuts over Shaq Barrett. Nobody went nuts over Steven Nelson. Okay, maybe he's underappreciated. The 2019 season was underappreciated.
Every
but as a
Fan
whole,
Friday, we have to have at least one where Ben just argues himself.
And Mock Draft Monday, which is just how we bookend the week. It's just with me disagreeing with myself on my own podcast.
This is true. All right, so I'm glad that you came around to that one because there were a lot of people who put Steven Nelson's name in there. ADP said, this one's pretty simple, Michael Gallup. And we talked about him a little bit on this podcast in a couple of different ways, but got over 100 targets. Man, he was something. I think that, Ben, you took a look at his 2019 season under more of a microscope than I did, so you can speak to this one more than I, but we've had conversations about this. It's time to talk about Michael Gallup as a legit wide receiver opposite Amari Cooper.
And that time is long past, brother. Michael Gallup, this is my favorite way to describe how good I think Michael Gallup is. Yards per route run is a metric from PFF, and if you're suspicious of metrics of PFF, don't worry, it's okay. All they do is count the amount of yards that the receiver acquired and then the amount of times they ran a route in a passing concept, which is better than yards per reception or yards per target because it helps incorporate when they could have been targeted but were not targeted, right? So this is going to be receivers who get out there, and when they're out there, they get targeted, and when they get targeted, they produce yardage. Here's the top 10. Stop me when I reach a bad football player, okay? 1, Michael Thomas.
Stop.
2,
just kidding. I'm just kidding.
I should have seen that coming. Okay. Michael Thomas, Stephon Diggs,
stop.
AJ Brown, which is an extreme, he's third in the league, which is really interesting. So if you want to make a case for AJ Brown being really good, that's it right there.
I'm proud of you for just moving on past the second troll. I'm proud of you.
Yep. Tyreek Hill, Julio Jones, Devontae Adams, Mike Evans, Amari Cooper, Chris Godwin, and then there at 10 is Michael Gallup. Now, when we go into the 20s, we really get the list like Hunter Renfrow, Cortland Sutton, Terry McLaurin, Deebo Samuel. Like, this is where we start to get those really young guys who were impressive last year. But Gallup is above everybody else, and he's notably above Sutton as well, who Sutton's kind of the darling of that 2018 receiver class. Gallup did this as a wide receiver 2. Sutton does it as a wide receiver 1. So that tells you, obviously, Sutton's receiving probably more attention and coverage, but also Gallup's not even the primary target in a lot of the Cowboys offensive structure. And so what you have with Gallup in terms of what he did last year, you know, he gets 16 yards per reception, he had over 1,000 yards. If he were a high volume wide receiver 1, I think his numbers would have been astronomical in year 2. It really, like, adjusting for Cooper, who was, you know, an equal target getter, they both have like 130 something targets, I think, tells you that if Gallup were a feature receiver, I think that he would be much more so in the national conversation. Gallup was unbelievably droppy in 2019, and he's like generally a little droppy, but if his drops just like regress back to average, his like, you know, like not even average, just like what he was in 2018, he's just one of the best deep threats in the league, period. And he's so freaking good. His physicality is nuts. Like, the guy just does not get pushed off his line at all. He makes insane catches where he should just like not be able to focus and concentrate the way that he can, but he's just so stinking physical. I love physical receivers. I have a thing for physical receivers. Gallup is a bully. I love him.
We're staying on the wide receiver trend, and this is the one that I was talking about that I'm gonna brag a little bit about, a scouting thing, but it's not really a brag because I was still wrong in how I valued them. But Reggie said Bobby Woods which is Robert Woods, the wide receiver from the Los Angeles Rams. He said production most of his career. TDs might not show it last year, but when the Rams needed to make a play, Woods was usually there. Same could be said throughout his tenure. Never made a Pro Bowl. Not the biggest, not the fastest, yet somehow he finds a way to win most plays. He says he's very versatile. What?
Is this question on the thing? I can't find it. This is a quote tweet.
No, it's just a reply.
I can't find it. Okay. I mean, I'm ready to talk about Robert Woods anytime, so
there's
no problem.
All right, so hold on. I can't cut his statement in half. He said, very versatile, second most carries for a wide receiver behind Debo, I believe. We'll have to fact check him on that one. He's a great teammate. He's a highlight reel of a blocker, huge in the run game, does not get the love he deserves. Listen up, folks. Your boy had Robert Woods as wide receiver one in the 2013.
Say it louder for the people.
2013 NFL draft. Wide receiver one. Now, Ben, was I wrong? Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Guess who else is in that class? DeAndre Hopkins, Keenan Allen.
Yes, not great, but still a dub.
But I still hang my hat on the Robert Woods love, because when I watched USC and it was Robert Woods and it was Marquise Lee, Lee was getting a lot of the pub. And I'm like, guys.
Fellas.
Robert Woods is better. He just been better. And it has been great to see Robert Woods be as consistent and as he's been able to be throughout his career. Obviously, it started in Buffalo. He's in Buffalo for 4 years. He's been with the Rams the last 4 years. And the last 2 years of his career, he's had back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. Had six touchdowns, like Reggie was saying. The touchdowns aren't necessarily there. He had six in 2018. He only had two in 2019. But I think Robert Woods has had a very steady career, and I think he has been one of those guys that just because he has not been a superstar, he does not get talked about a lot. And the Robert Woods love is always welcome on this podcast.
I think, okay, so firstly, running attempts. The leader, according to PFR, in wide receiver rushing attempts in 2019 is Ty Johnson, who is definitely a running back. So number two is J.D. McKissic, who is arguably a running
back.
Who is
also a running back.
Okay, McKissic has 88 career rushes and 91 career targets.
He's a running back.
Probably a running back. Three is Taysom Hill. Is Taysom Hill a wide receiver?
Taysom Hill is a tight end.
Yes. So, okay. Then Curtis Samuel, who is definitely a wide receiver.
Maybe.
He is 100% a wide receiver.
He's a running back in my Madden teams.
Curtis Samuel has 196 career targets and 31 career rushes. He is a wide receiver.
He is a running back in my Madden franchises.
All right, five is Cordarrelle Patterson.
Who also was in the 2013 NFL draft.
Right, yeah.
And I think I had... All right, hold on. I'm trying to remember this because this is right when I really started to write stuff down in scouting. I think I had Robert Woods 1, Tavon Austin 2, DeAndre Hopkins was 3, Cordarrelle Patterson was 4, and I think I had Justin Hunter at 5, or maybe it was Terrence Williams.
A lot of people were high on Justin Hunter. Dude, yeah. This class is just like a story. It's just a story of guys who just did not pan out.
I didn't have Keenan Allen in my top five. I didn't have Marquise Goodwin in my top five.
Sometimes I feel bad about the Eagles drafting Jordan Matthews in the second round of this draft, and then I look at Quentin Patton and Terrence Williams and Tavon Austin and Cordarrelle Patterson and Justin Hunter, and I go, oh, okay, never mind, we're fine.
Wait, Jordan Matthews is in this draft?
2013, yeah, Vanderbilt. Remember, he was like leading receiver in the SEC Hunter and...
Hold up. No, he's not on here.
Wait. Did he come out in 2014?
Yeah, he's not on here.
He went back to school. He went back to school and he came out in 2014. Yeah.
What a nerd!
I tell you lies. I deceive.
I love Jordan Matthews.
Yes. Anyway. So Curtis Samuel, Cordarrelle Patterson, but Woods is tied with Patterson, 17 rushing attempts for fifth. Debo's actually below them. 14 rushing attempts last year.
Get ready.
So, there's some trivia for you. Robert Woods, to me, is the ultimate... Not the ultimate. He's the default litmus test for, like, a film grinder. review at you at like somebody's like, oh, I watch that NFL film. You'd be like, all right, who's one of the most underappreciated players in the league? If their answer isn't Robert Woods, they don't really grind film. Because he's just that sort of like, just like do it all. Like he's like, well, I did the build a wide receiver publish a couple weeks ago, and Robert Woods was my pick for blocking, right? He's the best blocking receiver in the league. He's like Robert not Woods. Big. He's just really effortful. Like
he's just pissed
tries.
Off.
Right, exactly. And it's crazy because like he's not trying so hard the way that like Miles Boykin was trying so hard as a third round rookie on a team that majorly runs the ball. He's trying so hard as like a 7-year vet. It's like the one of the leading target getters on his team. You know what I mean? So he's just really consistent and extremely willing to do a lot of ugly stuff that like star receivers wouldn't. So yes, Woods is to me the go-to. If somebody asked me, like, oh, if you watch film, who's really good and everybody talks about it? I'm like, oh, it's Robert Woods. Like, he's just that guy.
My man. I didn't realize you were super, like, that high on Robert Woods, but I've always, going back to the USC days, had a soft spot in my heart for Robert Woods.
When Robert Woods was on Buffalo, and every year in fantasy, you would read the article, like, who's a sleeper receiver? And they'd be like, you know who's a sleeper receiver this year?
Bobby
Woods, baby.
Bobby, I also love that Reggie called him Bobby. I read the beginning of that tweet and I was like, who is Bobby Woods?
Bobby Woods, baby.
Dean said Akeem Hicks. And let me tell you, you don't think Akeem Hicks is underappreciated?
You can't. Are we saying Akeem Hicks is underappreciated? Akeem Hicks is the man.
Okay. No. All right. So you're just arguing that he is not underappreciated.
I think you would really struggle to find people. I guess maybe now because Akeem Hicks was injured for all last season. But at the end of like the 2018 season, there wasn't a list of defensive tackles in the league that didn't have Akeem Hicks as like a tier two defensive tackle or
higher. That's good. Because when the Bucs were in Soldier Field, God, what was this? Must have been 2018. So, okay, there you go. Yeah, 2 years ago. The Bucs were playing in Chicago. And everybody obviously focused on Khalil Mack because Khalil Mack was there. And the guy that I came away most impressed with that entire game was Akeem Hicks. Like, he could not be blocked no matter where they were playing him on the interior. And he was either standing his ground on the run game, getting into the backfield when it was obvious passing situations. I was super impressed with him. And ever since then, I've been trying to cape for him as much as I can. So I guess I can only hear from my own perception. Right. I don't know how underrated Akeem Hicks is around the league, but I would say 100% that he is a good player.
Right. I think if you say to me, Akeem Hicks was injured all last season, and now if you ask the average NFL fan, like, who's better, Eric Armstead or Akeem Hicks, they'd be like, oh, Eric Armstead. He had nine sacks. Right. Like, then, yeah, I'm with you. But after that 2018 season, the last season with Fangio, where that Bears defense literally dragged the offense into the playoffs, I don't think you had people who were underappreciating Akeem Hicks. I think there was a good national understanding of just how talented that guy is. Also, not for nothing, but this podcast will stand Akeem Hicks forever because when he was asked why Colin Kaepernick didn't have a job as a backup somewhere, he mentioned that the Bears signed Mike Glennon, which is just the most unbelievable, you didn't have to do him like that moment. In recent NFL memory, Mike Glennon got the biggest stray bullet of all time, and it was delightful.
I yelped when I read that for the first time.
I went through the minutes worth of explaining to Meredith the characters in that circle so that I could tell her that Akeem Hicks said, we signed Mike Glennon, because it was that important to me.
Unbelievable. That was truly an elite roast. Cody Rourke, fan of the podcast, we've had him on before. He covers the Denver Broncos. Works for
Let me guess. He has either Justin Simmons or AJ Johnson.
He has Justin Simmons on here, which I would approach this Justin Simmons one the same way you just approached the Akeem Hicks one.
I agree.
Justin Simmons is not underrated. Justin Simmons is recognized by enough people, and Cody goes on to say, I don't want to crap on Cody's suggestion here, but
I want to. Cody's the worst.
Shout out Cody. He says hasn't really received as much national recognition, but became the Broncos' defensive QB last season, aligning everybody, playing in an All-Pro level, coming into his own, now considered a cornerstone of the franchise. I would argue that that is what a lot of people view him as in the NFL. Like, Justin Simmons is just, if you don't know Justin Simmons is good at this point, you need to start diversifying your timeline. Like, you need to start having some other writers that right. you're reading, because Simmons is awesome.
I will say, so I think that the case you're going to make for Simmons being underappreciated is the go-to case for safeties, which is Derwin James is on the screen and Justin Simmons isn't, because Derwin James plays the box and Justin Simmons plays deep. And most safeties that are underappreciated in the league, in my opinion, are safeties who play deep half to deep middle, because they are not on the screen as frequently, right? So I think that that is a fair assessment, because that's always just a heuristic problem. The other thing is, I think a lot of people now would be good at telling you out loud, oh, Justin Simmons is one of the best safeties in the league. Justin Simmons is underappreciated, because they've seen it reported. Mm-hmm. But if you were like, why? I don't think you would get a lot of great answers. For me, in a sentence, for a safety to be as good at center field coverage as Simmons is from a speed, ball skills, and play recognition perspective, to be as good at tackling as he is extremely rare.
Yeah.
Usually when a safety is that good at deep middle of field coverage, you go, okay, screw it. I don't care what he does as a tackler. This is interceptions. This is pass breakups. This is canceling deep routes. I will deal with him as a bad tackler. Simmons is one of the best tackling safeties in the league, yet he's not 220 playing the box. He's deep middle, and he's denying routes, and he's overlapping deep zones and everything, and great play recognition. So what to me makes him really exciting is for him to have the impact that he does in the passing game, but to still be a consistent third-level tackler, stopping big plays in the running game, limiting yak, is really, it's a short list, and it starts with Earl Thomas, and it might end with Justin Simmons. So there you go.
Joe said Alexander Johnson, the linebacker from Denver. So
I know him as AJ Johnson. Did he change his name?
Maybe. Could be AJ.
I always thought, like, yeah, okay, his Wikipedia is AJ Johnson, so I feel extremely validated, because Wikipedia's never been wrong.
I didn't know a lot about AJ going into this, and so I ended up reading an article that I believe Joe wrote. Yeah, Joe wrote this article about AJ and the impact that he brings to Denver's defense, and how he is in run recognition and how he can be used as a blitzer. Man, I was impressed with a lot of the clips that he had. I didn't really know. This was a target player for me as the audience here. I learned a thing or two. Now I know who AJ Johnson is.
So my answer on AJ Johnson is thus. Yes, his 2019 season was underappreciated. Is he an underappreciated player overall? I'm not yet ready to say it. Not dissimilar to the Steven Nelson issue, right? Where I need to see him for a couple of years to tell you comfortably that I think he's underappreciated. And the other reason that I'm worried about that and suspicious of that is because he's a linebacker playing for Vic Fangio. And the thing about linebackers that play for Vic Fangio is that when they go somewhere else, they don't play as good, right? Like, mm-hmm. I remember Fangio's.
Why would I hold that against him, though?
Well, that's the thing. Is like, if Johnson's an underappreciated in terms of his
then
talent
leave.
Level.
Then leave.
Well, I'm just
go
saying.
Go
like,
somewhere else so Ben right. can validate you.
Right. I think that that's a necessary check. But like, I remember when Fangio was coordinating for. So when Fangio was coordinating for San Francisco, it was like Bowman and Willis, right? Navarro Bowman and Patrick Willis. Mm-hmm. Those guys were nuts. There's no two ways about that. But like, Fangio got Nick Kwiatkowski paid. Fangio helped get Danny Trevathan paid. And, like, I don't think Trevathan and Kwiatkowski are bad players, but I do think that they greatly benefited from playing for Fangio. There was a year where, like, Jarrell Freeman had, like, 500 tackles for the Bears under Fangio. And it's just, like, Freeman was just a journeyman vet. Like, you know, he just, like, he was a fine player. And then he had his, by far, his best season for Chicago ever or something like that. And then, you know, I think that he was like out of the league a couple years later, right? It's just, Fangio is really good for middle linebackers, and that's okay. I just like, you know, that'll help Johnson develop. But right now, it's too early for me to say like AJ Johnson is generally underappreciated. I think people don't realize how good he was for Denver in 2019, but I'm not there yet.
According to Ben, in order to be a good player in the NFL, you have to have bad coaching around you and bad supporting cast so you can overcome.
Can't play for Vic Fangio. No, Akeem Hicks and AJ Johnson. I've just been like, no, Vic Fangio's good. Shut up.
We're about halfway through this podcast, which is a great point to talk to you guys about rockauto.com. It is a family-owned business serving auto parts customers for nearly 20 years. You can go to rockauto.com, shop for all of your auto and body part needs from hundreds of different manufacturers. These guys have everything. Engine control modules, brake parts, taillights, motor oil, new carpet, literally whatever it is for whatever kind of car you drive, they've got it for you. The catalog is super unique, remarkably easy to navigate. It's quick to see all the parts that are available, the ones that you can get for your car exactly. And you can even talk to somebody that if you have some questions saying, hey, I'm thinking about this part or this part. Or maybe you can just call and be like, yo, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm either looking to upgrade my car somehow or fix it in this way. They're going to help you out in that regard. You can go to rockauto.com, see all the parts that they have available for your car or truck. And if you do and you end up buying something, write Locked On in there. How did you hear about us? So they know that we sent you there so you guys can support this podcast, and that'll be a good way to make it happen. They've got an amazing selection, super reliable low prices, all the parts you'll ever need at rockauto.com.
Hey, Trev.
Yes.
Do they have rock absorbers at rockauto.com?
Do they have rock absorbers?
And do they have brake pebbles? Maybe stick shift?
Is this what this feels like?
Do they have loadometers? That's four. Stick shift was such a good one, too.
Is this what this feels like?
I don't know.
When I troll the shit out of you? Is this what it feels like to be on the other end?
I feel electric right now. I could fly if I wasn't holding on to my chair armrest. So this
and
is
you
great.
Know what I was okay, you know what I was going to ask you, though, after that?
Hit me with it.
Is, let's say you're on rockauto.com. And you get hungry, like right in the middle of your search. Like you're really trying to find the right auto part for your car, you know, whether an upgrade or a repair, like whatever it is. And you're just like, man, I'm hungry. What would be the best way, you think, to curb that hunger in the moment? Because, you know, you don't have the time to go make food. You know, you're looking at your purchase. You don't want to lose your spot. You can't go out and get something. You're not going to order takeout because then you're just going to lose your place. But, like, is there a way you could really quench that hunger while you're searching for car parts on rockauto.com? Can you think of anything?
Trevor?
Yeah.
I would get a Built Bar.
You would get a Built Bar. Damn right you would. Because Built Bars are the best tasting protein bars on the planet. They got 16 different amazing flavors. They got 7 times less carbs and sugar than your regular bars, but they got all the protein you want. They got like 13 grams, 15 grams. Some of them even have 20 grams. These things are fantastic for your macros. They're great for your diet. You could throw them in and eat them any time of the day. Like I said, they taste awesome, and that's the biggest thing for me. Anytime I'm eating a protein bar, it's got to taste good. I've been working out, and I've been eating different kinds of protein bars and protein shakes my whole life, and some just taste like crap. These taste great. We know that you are going to find a flavor that you love. You can head on over to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you're going to get 10% off your first box. The best part is you don't even have to choose one flavor. You can have a mix of flavors in your first box, and you're still going to get that discount on there. So head on over to BuiltBar.com, get your first box. That's just how it goes.
All right. Congratulations.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. Next on the criminally underrated list, unsung heroes, the guys that deserve more praise, we have Patrick Mahomes. I mean, yeah. I think this one's true. Pat Mahomes does not.
Is this Ryan?
Yeah.
Ryan's my buddy on Philly Twitter.
Let's face the facts. Pat Mahomes does not get the love he deserves in the debate between him and Tom Brady as the greatest of all time. He doesn't.
You think that'll be a conversation when Pat Mahomes' career is all said and done?
Yeah, if you hung him up right now, it'd be a great conversation.
Oh, right now it's a conversation.
Yeah. That's why he's underrated.
All right. Well, we'll see.
Tim O'Shea also said Chris Hogan when he's healthy. I could buy this.
Is Chris Hogan still in the league?
I don't think he is still in the league, but like when he was with the Patriots, it was like, hey, this guy used to Play lacrosse.
Okay. Now, officially, Chris Hogan is still in the league, and I did not know he's still in the league, that definitely means he's underappreciated, because I literally thought he was retired.
I don't think
he's still in the league.
What does he play for?
Played 7 games for Carolina last year. He had 1 start, 8 receptions for 67 yards.
I did know that. Because he caught a pass.
He
caught a pass in the Bucs game.
Wow. I knew this. Embarrassing.
Daniel said Tyreek Hill as a top 5 wide receiver in the NFL. He said, I think that people study his game more, they've come to see he's much more than just speed. He's turned himself into a top receiver, not just a weapon.
I'm not done on Chris Hogan. Hogan.
Okay, go ahead.
No, it's fine. I learned from looking up his PFR. Chris Hogan's nickname, as attributed by PFR, is 7-11.
Because he's always open.
Which, if you had asked me to name which Patriots receiver was nicknamed 7-11 because he's always open, Chris Hogan would have been my 7th guess.
7th?
We looked over Wes Welker and Julian Edelman for Chris Hogan?
Dude, Chris Hogan would have been like my 117th guess.
I'm literally shocked that he got 7-11 of all the people to go through
New
England.
No, this is insulting to Chris Hogan. I don't want to do that. I was going to say, we need to like rebrand the nickname 7-11. Like, we need to give it to somebody else.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry, Chris. I don't think that...
Let's give it to Chris Godwin.
Honestly, no, but he's got God in his name. So really, we have a lot more to work with than we did with Chris Hogan.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'm sticking with the Hoagie.
Tyreek Hill, good ball player. Whether or not you have him as a top 5 receiver boils down to the question of how much do you value explosive plays. Because I think the general gestalt in NFL coverage is that, or not gestalt, I'd say the general just like, you know, meta for coverage in the NFL is that like we don't value explosive plays on offense enough. We need to give more credence to an offense ability and a player's ability to make explosive plays, in which case Tyreek Hill is underappreciated, right? Because no receiver in the NFL gets more respect as a deep threat than Tyreek Hill, and no receiver in the NFL is better, in my opinion, from a yak perspective than Tyreek Hill. Maybe not. I think there's an argument to be made for other players as the top yak guys. Hill's kind of like a target density thing, too, because he gets so many deep targets, and it's hard to get yak on deep targets. But anyway.
He's doing it again, folks.
Fundamentally, it's a conversation of if you think that NFL offenses should be built around creating explosive plays, they should not be built around, you know, 3 downs, pick up 12 yards, move the sticks, then yeah, Tyreek Hill's a top 5 wide receiver in the NFL, and you can't even question that. He's probably top 3, right? It's that fundamental character of offense that kind of tips the scales for him.
I'm interested to hear what you think about this one. Tyler Lockett, what do you think about this? Because my first reaction is no. Tyler Lockett's not underrated. I think that like what he... Now he says in here, some of his greatness gets lost in the Seattle circus of Russell Wilson and the passing offense versus the coaching staff running the ball 50 times per game. But all he does is get open and make plays. I already think Tyler Lockett's a really damn good wide receiver. And I feel like now, like at least as of late, he's really been emphasized as the guy in that offense. So I just straight up think Tyler Lockett's good. I don't think he's underrated. Is he? Do you think he's underrated?
Well, this is right. I think that you start with this phenomenon, which is I think that most people, if you ask them about Tyler Lockett, would be like, yeah, Doug Baldwin retired, and so Tyler Lockett became the top, you know, receiver for the Seattle Seahawks. Like, they would view Lockett's ascension more as a product of Baldwin leaving than a product of anything that Tyler Lockett did, which is, I think, unfair, because Lockett is a really good downfield receiver and warranted and earned that job successfully.
I agree.
I want to throw a stat at you for Lockett, and you tell me how many people you think would predict this and understand this and be good around it. And I can even put this out on Twitter, because I think it'd be really interesting to ask the question. And if not many people would know this stat, then I think you have your answer that he's underrated. Over the last 2 years, Michael Thomas leads the league in catch percentage. among wide receivers at 82.5%. He catches 82.5% of his targets. That's literally insane. But the next closest, second, is Tyler Lockett, who catches 77.2% of his targets. And it's worth noting that his yards per reception is 3 yards longer than Thomas's is, and his yards per target is 2 yards longer than Thomas's is. Right, so what we're talking about, like, other guys at the top of the list are Adam Humphries and Adam Thielen and Cooper Kupp and Keenan Allen and Emmanuel Sanders and even DeAndre Hopkins, and all these guys are around 11 and 12 yards per reception. Tyler Lockett's at 14.5. So in terms of consistently catching the football, over the last 2 years, which is the 2 years that Lockett's been a starter for the Seahawks, the only player who's been better at catching the football has been Thomas, and Lockett does it further down the field.
Which matters. A lot. And that's not... People might look at those stats and go, like, okay, like, so what? It's, like, 3 yards further. Who cares? Like, that's a lot.
I do want to put this question to Twitter now to see if somebody's going to figure out it's Lockett. But to me, that's stunning to me, right? Yeah. You would not think that to be the case with Lockett. And Lockett also doesn't tilt your mind as a high volume receiver because of the nature of the Seattle offense, which is kind of alluding to what he talked about. We also, I think, have Chris Carson on here as like an underrated guy.
Yeah.
And again, that goes back to, you know, the Seattle offense kind of obscures who's valuable on that team and who's performing well. Lockett doesn't seem like a high volume receiver because the Seahawks don't throw the ball as much as the Saints do. But, you know, you could argue that in equivalent situations, Lockett would be producing at a volume not the same as Thomas, because Thomas is record setting, but a lot more analogous as compared to Thomas.
Analogous.
A lot more comparable. That you'd be able to see the comparison more easily.
No, I like analogous.
Analogous, man.
Analogous is better. All right, Ben, here we go. Ryan Kerrigan. Sam brought this up. Big shout out. Ryan Kerrigan, averaging 10 sacks a season and has only missed 4 games in 9 years. Folks, Ryan Kerrigan is on a Hall of Fame pace for his career.
The people need to know.
The people need to know this. He's 31 years old, so he's going to be 32 during the 2020 season. And in these 9 seasons of play, he has 90 sacks. The man averages double-digit sacks a season. Averages. That is wild to me. He has also, outside of his rookie season, had double-digit tackles for loss every single year of his career, minus his past one, where he missed 4 games due to injury. This man's career is wild. I mean, I don't think that he's as underrated anymore, especially to the listeners on this podcast, because I feel like we pounded the table for Ryan Kerrigan so many times. It's like, if you listen to this, you have to be a stan of Ryan Kerrigan. But this is crazy. I mean, to play 9 seasons and have 90 sacks, to average double digit, I mean, that's... To have this longevity and this much success, you're talking about a Hall of Fame career, and I really don't think anybody ever really talks about Ryan Kerrigan the way that he deserves to be talked about. And another one that Sam brought up was Chandler Jones. He said he's got 60 sacks in 4 seasons in Arizona, but he doesn't...
This is a Joe Marino deep cut right here.
But
Joe Marino
doesn't
really
get mentioned with the likes of Mac, J.J. Watt, the Bosa brothers, maybe even T.J. Watt, I guess. Like, it's just... And I actually could see this. Chandler Jones was second in the NFL in sacks last season with 19.
Healthy.
But because nothing ever really happens with the Cardinals,
say it.
At least not as of late.
Attaboy.
You know, I mean, like, it hasn't. And this is the Bucs effect. And the next guys that we're going to get to, you and I are going to talk about our most underrated players. So I'm giving you a little bit of a primer there to get ready for
nice.
It. When you don't have, when you're not in a big market, and when your team doesn't have either a flashy quarterback or a winning record, quite frankly, people don't care. People rarely care. I think that's probably a better way to say it. And I do think that Chandler Jones has been incredible at his craft over the last handful of seasons.
Right.
But it has not amounted to the same kind of praise that we see from a lot of other guys around the league.
So, right. So Chandler Jones, real quick, to make his Hall of Fame argument, which you can find this article by Joe Marino on the Draft Network, 60 sacks in the four seasons with Arizona. His career sack total is at 96, which means
in
that...
In how many seasons?
Right. So that's what... Right. So in the first eight seasons of his career, Jones has 96 sacks. The all-time sack leader in the NFL is Bruce Smith with 200 career sacks. Bruce Smith had 92 in the first eight seasons of his career. So Jones is currently on a better pace than Smith, who Smith played 11 more seasons and put up 200 total sacks.
Chandler Jones probably won't play 11 more seasons.
Right, so that's where you lose it, right, because of the longevity. But Jones is producing on a per-season basis better than Smith was during the early primes of their career. So that's the argument for Smith. The argument for Ryan Kerrigan as a Hall of Famer is more so one of longevity. And what's important to note is if we're talking since Kerrigan entered the league, which is in 2011, Kerrigan has seven seasons of the 10 that he's played, excuse me, the nine that he's played, in which he's had at least 8.5 sacks. That's tied for the most with Von Miller, who Von Miller is largely recognized as the best edge rusher in the NFL. Ryan Kerrigan is not largely recognized as one of the best edge rushers in the NFL.
Facts.
But when you look just across football as a whole, right, the history of the game, the best stretches are 10 total seasons, including John Randall, Bruce Smith, both of whom are Hall of Famers, Julius Peppers and John Abram, both of whom are expected to be Hall of Famers. At nine, you have Jason Taylor, Jared Allen, Dwight Freeney, Kevin Green. At eight, you have Michael Strahan, Reggie White, and then you get down to seven. Chris Dolman, Derek Thomas, Terrell Suggs, Von Miller, Cam Wake, Ryan Kerrigan. So we're looking, like, when you talk about some of those names, like, you know, like Taylor and Green and Strahan and White, they're all Hall of Famers already. You expect guys like Mathis and Freeney and Jared Allen and Jay Pep and certainly like Wake and Vaughn and Suggs to also end up being Hall of Famers. Ryan Kerrigan is just right there with seven. He's just there. Like, he's among those guys. Active player. The only four active players who have at least seven seasons of 8.5 sacks are Kerrigan, Vaughn, Suggs, and Wake. And I think if you asked anybody, like, hey, is Vaughn going to be a Hall of Famer? They'd be like, yeah. If like, is Cam Wake going to be a Hall of Famer? They'd be like, yeah. Think Terrell Suggs going to be a Hall of Famer? They'd be like, yeah, probably. You think is Kerrigan going to be a Hall of Famer? They'd be like, who is that? So that's right. This is where
it's
this
damn
is the,
shame, Ben.
It's definitive proof that Kerrigan remains underappreciated. And, like, in that the Redskins drafted young, is Kerrigan likely going to max out at seven? Yes. And that kind of blows. But let's say, like, Kerrigan goes to a competing team in a midseason trade or whatever, right? If he hits eight, he's one of 14 people in league history to do it. I don't understand how you're not going to give that at least Hall of Fame consideration, right? Yep. But it's the Frank Gore argument. It's just he's been around for a long time, right? So he has 8.5, right. But he's maxed out at, I think, 13.
Right.
Is his career high? 13.5.
Yes, 13.
I mean, he's done 13.5, 13, and 13. Like, it's just he's so steady, which I don't know if that gets you into the Hall, but it deserves to be mentioned, and so mention him we will.
All right, so let's do our own. Me and you, the player that is the most underrated or the one that you would like to go to bat for the most, it could be on the Eagles, or it doesn't have to be. Is there a player that immediately comes to mind that you wish just got more attention? Maybe not even more attention. Maybe it's just you wish they had the accolades even that their talent deserved. Is there a player that comes to mind?
There's like 12. Do you okay. have one that you want to go?
Do I have one?
Yeah.
Yes, and everybody knows who it's going to be.
All right, hit me with it.
Can you guess? Do you know who it's going to be?
Ryan Kerrigan.
No, it's the other player in the NFL that I cape for, probably even harder than Ryan Kerrigan, even though I don't...
Lavonte David, baby.
It is Lavonte David. Lavonte David, since coming into the NFL in 2012, 11, camera, it's one of those years, has absolutely been one of the best linebackers in the NFL. He gets forgotten for All-Pro honors and Pro Bowl honors because there have been a handful of other linebackers that have had 1 or 2 year great runs, just their peaks have been super hot, so they've earned the awards, or mainly guys like Bobby Wagner and Luke Kuechly, who consistently get more votes and recognition than David does. This kind of goes to the Chandler Jones thing. Nobody really cared what was going on in Tampa Bay because they sucked. I don't blame anybody for that. The Bucks were extremely boring. Well, maybe not boring. They were just straight bad for years. And it hurt Lavonte David. Ben, can you tell me how many Pro Bowls Lavonte David has made in his career?
Is this a legit question?
This is a legit question to you.
How many years did he play? Like seven?
He was drafted in 2012.
So eight. Two.
One.
Oh, wow. I was like, guess the lowest possible number. So you're not wrong. And I was like, all right, well, there's no way it's one.
One Pro Bowl.
Wow, sounds like a bad football player.
And it was 2015. I'm going to read you off some stats here. You ready for this, Ben?
I would like to hear some stats here.
Because guess who else was drafted in the 2012 NFL draft? Bobby Wagner.
Just guess any name?
Literally say any name. Any name at all, and you win.
J.J. Watt. No, he was 2011.
All three of these linebackers were drafted in the 2012 NFL draft. So they've had the same number of years to play the game. Luke Kuechly has the most total combined tackles among that group. He has 1,092, just short of 1,100. Bobby Wagner has 1,075. Lavonte David barely has over 1,000. He has 1,008, but he still passes the 1,000 number. When it comes to the other stats, I just want to read these off for you.
Read them off for me.
Luke Kuechly had 12.5 career sacks. Bobby Wagner has 19.5. Lavonte David has 22.5. So he has more than those guys in that category. When it comes to tackles for loss, Bobby Wagner has 58. Luke Kuechly had 75. Lavonte David has 116.
That's more than the other numbers you said.
That is much more than the numbers that I said. Bobby Wagner, in his career, because turnovers are important and causing turnovers are important, he has 5 forced fumbles. Luke Kuechly has 7. Lavonte David has 21.
Yo, wait. Run that one back.
Forced fumbles, okay? Turnovers. They're important, right?
Yes.
Bobby Wagner has 5. Luke Kuechly has 7. Lavonte David has 21.
He has 21 forced fumbles over his career?
Yes.
That's got to be the highest since 2012, right?
Bobby Wagner has 9 fumble recoveries. Luke Kuechly has 9 fumble recoveries. Lavonte David has 14.
I don't really care about fumble recoveries because those are accidents. Because they're luck.
I get it.
Yeah. Okay, I get it. Forced fumbles since 2012.
But he not only causes turnovers, he's around the ball enough to also grab turnovers when it comes to fumble recoveries. And I do think that there's something that goes
hey,
into that.
Hey, guess what? More. Ryan Kerrigan has 22. Why don't you suck it, Chief?
Lavonte David.
Closest linebacker is Jamie Collins, who's not really even a linebacker anyway. Okay, you win. Go ahead.
And then interceptions. Bobby Wagner has 10. Luke Kuechly has 18. Lavonte David has 11. All I'm saying is, when it comes to total tackles, Lavonte David does not have as many as Bobby Wagner and Luke Kuechly. When it comes to so much else about playing the linebacker position, Lavonte David has them both beat in almost every single category. Slept on. There you go. You're up, Ben.
Yeah, so David's overrated, then, you'd say, stats-wise.
Of course, yeah, 100%.
Stats overrate Lavonte David is my current argument.
What a bum.
There's a lot of players, right, like I said, a lot of players that I was going through mentally. My first instinct was Jakiski Tartt, who was just really, really good for the Niners last year.
Shout out Niners fans.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, a lot of the guys that I'm thinking of are players who aren't consistently healthy, and so they're underappreciated because their per-season stats don't look great, but their per-game stats are really good, and they just don't get recognition for the volume. I'm tempted to go with Jason Kelce. I don't want to just take
Jason Kelce was... Okay, go with Jason Kelce, because Jason Kelce was suggested, I think, twice in the comments.
OK, Okay, so Jason Kelce is a great example of the sensation that I brought up earlier, in the sense with T.Y. Hilton, going all the way back to the first player, where there are some players who are just so paramount in a physical aspect of their game that it allows them to account for deficiencies in other places. Kelce loses to power rushers. He loses to power rushers because he plays in the 290s, and he's not particularly strong in the upper body, right? So if you just put him head up with a 320-pounder, he's not going to win. And it's about as simple as that. With that said, the Eagles can do more in the running game than any team in the NFL because of Jason Kelce. There's a really – one of my favorite – just like film things of all time is Jason Kelce on a screen against Malik Collins against the Cowboys. I think it was Malik Collins. It's a defensive tackle. And it was Al Woods, where Al Woods diagnoses a screen perfectly. Like, he figures the whole thing out. He's lined up in the correct gap. He's just in a great spot. And Kelce just runs past him, runs behind him, runs around him, and by the time Al Woods is like, time to go make a tackle, Kelce has literally done a 270 around him and is just there. And Al Woods is stunned. Like, Al Woods has no idea how to process that a center like just ran around behind and got to the other side of him in the amount of time it took him to be like, a screen pass is happening. Kelce had the play against the Redskins on outside zone where he just blocked two guys because a linebacker was like, I'm going to engage with the center and then I'm just going to spill, you know, behind him and cut off the running back when they cut back. And Kelce was just like, what if instead I'm going to do that but faster than you? So the speed at which he moves, even though he's a lighter offensive lineman, allows the Eagles in the running game to just achieve impossible angles. The Eagles sight adjust a ton of stuff in their running game. So, like, they'll have it called, but, like, if there's a two-tech instead of a one-tech, you know, they change the combo block. And having Kelce, who's played a long time next to Sam Mallow and Brooks, that entire line is pretty well gelled. That's a big part of it. But it's also because there's nothing Kelce can't do. Like, you can't have that much versatility in your blocking schemes relative to the front the defense is giving you if you don't have at least one, like, two players, which for the Eagles, it's Kelce and Brooks, who can just make every block in the book. Like, there's just no player Kelce can't get to, which allows him to be just extremely multiple. Yeah, so the Eagles come out against the Packers in week 4, and they run exclusively Jordan Howard, and it's power, and it's pulling, and they've got H-backs and fullbacks, and they ram them down their throats. And then 5 weeks later, they're playing the Cowboys, and it's Miles Sanders with outside zone, and it's the same 5 starting linemen, and it starts with Jason Kelce just being ridiculously versatile. Other honorable mentions that I feel warranted to bring up, Matt Ryan definitely is one. David Onyemata.
Somebody said Matthew Stafford in the comments.
Yeah, then Stafford. I feel like Stafford's underrated every year, so is he underrated, right?
Yep, yes. David, if he's still underrated every year, then that would mean that he's underrated.
Well, I think if every year we claim he's underrated, it means he's not underrated.
I just don't think he gets talked about as some of the best passers in the game, with some of the best passers in the game.
Yeah. David Onyemata, the defensive tackle for New Orleans, and DeMario Davis, the linebacker for New Orleans, and Marcus Williams, the safety for New Orleans, are all extremely good football players. Ryan Ramczyk, also their right tackle. People are like, yo, Ronnie Stanley's about to get paid. Yeah, and then Ryan Ramczyk's going to get paid more than Ronnie Stanley, just in case anyone was wondering. Delightful talent. There was a running back I wanted to talk about.
Someone also said Marcus May in the comments.
No, I pissed Jets fans off by being like, hey, Marcus May came back from injury and wasn't as good as he was. People are like, what are you talking about? And I was like, is not as good as he was. I think he worries me health-wise. If he comes back 100%, that's great.
Man, imagine being that wrong. Javal said Josh Lambeau. We got to give the kicker the shout-out. And mainly because you said that we're not going to give kickers a shout-out.
All kickers are overappreciated except for Justin Tucker, who's underappreciated.
Sir. I'm gonna build a time machine just so you can go back and live what it was like in Tampa Bay from when they drafted Ricky Aguayo to then the point of then having Matt Gay. And I'm gonna make you live that. Because I will always respect the kicker praise on this podcast for that very reason.
It is a little, I do, like, you know, like, it does suck when you don't have one, but it's very tough for me to be like, oh, kicker's underappreciated, you know what I mean? Kickers are over-criticized, I'll give you that.
Kicker is very funny because kickers are treated like running backs where you go, you're just like, yeah, go find anybody who can kick. Like, everybody can kick. It's not a tough job. And then all of a sudden you have these teams who are basically bouncing around kickers for years and they can't get one. And the ones that have solid kickers for an extended period of time, like, they will tell you that that is absolutely an element of their success, that they don't even have to worry about anytime they're around or in front of the 35-yard line, it's at least 3 points. Like, it's just automatic. They don't care. They don't even think about it. That is such a luxury that is – it's just really weird how on the other side of the coin, a lot of people just go, yeah, it's a kicker. Who cares? But the really good ones, I think, consistently make a difference for good teams.
Joe is converting you, man. This is Marino talk right here.
Wait, what is he converting me to?
Joe's Mr. Like, you know, like a punter is worth 1.5 drives, 1.5 points per drive or something like that. Joe's got this stat about why punters are extremely important that he just like hammers home all the time.
Field position wins. Hashtag yeah. Field position wins.
Hate to see it.
No, you really do love to see it. All right, that was a lot of fun. I feel vindicated. I feel like I got the Levante David argument off of my chest. I feel great. I feel like I'm about to have a very good weekend. Hopefully you guys are as well. We have a mock draft Monday coming up for you at the beginning of next week. We do have a couple more draft class recaps that we're getting to, and then we're opening it up. After that, we're getting into our summer scouting series. I'm very, very excited about that. We're going to dive into this 2021 class. Go back and listen to the beginning of the Detroit Lions podcast from earlier this week if you haven't done that already. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.